Welcome back. Have a seat for the last session, which is on future technology and innovation, and where we'll try and translate the wonkishness into reality, into what might be actually real moving forward. Not that any of our speakers are wonkish in the slightest, but you can give them a mark for wonkishness on your app. Speaking of the app for feedback's moved. It's now second on the top row for speaker feedback. Please do that feedback because it gives really good information about how to improve things for the next time. This is a really important session, not that the other sessions haven't been important, is that it's kind of a cliche to say it, but the future is now. Just the rate of change is so huge. Big data analytics, changing, the world is changing at an immense pace around us, and we don't adapt at our peril. And so this is an opportunity to discuss some of the things that are here or on the horizon, both in terms of actuarial work and the medical side of things as well. Our first speaker is an actuary of immense seniority and experience. He is Executive General Manager of Corporate Initiatives at IAG. He's been with IAG for quite a while. Prior to IAG, Tim spent 19 years at Swiss Re working here and overseas. So he brings an enormous amount of experience to the lectern. Please welcome Tim.
Thanks very much for that. So today we're going to talk about the future, and I'm pretty well qualified being an actuary because my training is all about asking the questions and not really giving the answers. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to throw some ideas out at you and see where the discussion goes. We're talking in the context of health. I'm going to talk kind of with the future view and looking at it from a customer lens. That's where we're going to get to. Then Hugh's going to do how, and Chris is going to do specifics in the medical field, I think, is how the session's going to go. And as Norman said, right, the amount of disruption that is out there and the amount of change that is going on, it's got people quite rightly nervous. I don't think human society knows where all this change is going to go. But if you just think about it, the way we create, the way we manage, the way we produce things, from 3D printing to downloadable software that changes your hardware in your Tesla car, it just changes overnight. We don't quite produce things the same we used to. The way we can aggregate data, we've talked about all the time over this conference, it enables totally different insights. The way the connectivity, we can manage logistics in a totally different way to the way we used to. The way we use the crowd, Wikipedia, you know, crowdfunding, all of these things are fundamental changes to the way our society's been structured. And what's happening is there's a lot of people who are getting dislocated by this, and society's very nervous. And you see it in Trumpian behaviour and those sort of things. So we've got to be really careful about it. The rules, the processes, the customs that we've operated society by, they all have to change. And I want to take it through a couple of points to take that through, if I go here. Is that right? So I just want to do some simple maths and show you just how powerful big data is. 25 million Australians, how uniquely can we identify one of you? How much data do we actually need to uniquely identify you? Not a lot. So 25 million Australians, you're one in 25 million. If we know your postcode, there's about 17,000 postcodes, so you're about one in 1,500, just with one piece of extra information. If we know your date of birth, divide by 365, one in four. And if I know your year of birth as well, I almost know you uniquely. So just how quickly aggregation of data is, it's very powerful. That's the whole point of this slide. Also, you think about your simple water meter. If I know the amount of water you're using in your house and the time of day you're using, what can I judge from that? knowing the average shower time. I probably know how many people live in your house. I probably know with your usage patterns, whether it's a commercial or a retail property. I could know when you're on holidays, because the water usage is down. You know, just the daily rhythms of the house from one simple data set. You think about that. And then if you add to that all the new data sets, how many of us have got smartwatches that are beaming where my location is all the time? Our phones, what's getting beamed around and how's it getting used is really just the tip of the iceberg, and how we're going to use that data is going to be really interesting. With big data, there's a different way of analysing things, and this chap, what was his name, Leo Brainman, wrote in 2001, and he wrote about the two cultures. So actuaries, we're from the scientific method culture. We thought that we can reduce the complexity of the world down to some simple levers, inputs, outputs, and actually refine the world down to a simple model that we believe we could do stuff with. And that was about reducing the complexity of the world down into a model. And it's done great things for us, and that's what we're trying to show there. Actually, lots of machine learning and big data is actually just chucking the data together, working, looking for patterns, and not actually seeking to resolve the complexity of the world down into three to four drivers, but actually just look at what the outcome is. It's a fundamental different way of thinking around things. And if you think around how our rules, the Discrimination Act, for example, is designed around actually being able to say this behaviour, this lever, this output, you can determine it. But actually, with big data, sometimes you won't be able to determine it at all. You know, there's things, you know, do you know there's a relationship between the purchase of rice and an increased household burglary rate? Do you know people who buy things on the web after 7 o'clock at night have an increased car frequency rate? I actually don't know that either. But they are the types of things that can come out from some big data analysis. They're patterns that you don't think have any causal effects, but maybe they do. Regardless of which method you use, the scientific method, the reductionalism, or the machine learning method, where it's pattern matching, you get errors. Every model has errors. And what I would try to do here, and again, these are just made up numbers, but it was just my thinking around what are the more predominant errors you're going to get from using your model in the future. On the right-hand side is what I think is on the statistical method view, or the traditional actuarial view. On the left-hand side is what I think might come from machine learning. We all have the problem that bad data leads to bad models. That's the blue up there. I think probably not fully represented data sets. That's probably we get more in the statistical method rather than in the machine learning method. Existing biases in the data. This has been one of the problems of machine learning, that we've just used the data, we've kept populating or kept finding the pattern in the data that was already there. And there's a classic one that there's one that came out with tall people tend to be hairier than short people. Well, men tend to be hairier, men tend to be taller. That was kind of the problem that came in the bias in that data set. But you actually see it happen quite a lot more in kind of where you're studying employment situations and trying to get equality in the workforce, those sort of things, those continually reinforcing loops coming through. Extrapolation, we all know about model and extrapolation. We always try and build a model and extrapolate it out to the tail. That's going to be the same problem in both. Feature selection is the variables that you use. I think with machine learning, often you find variables that are either redundant or correlated to other things. I think when you reduce it down, you probably segment it out differently. ecological fallacy, this is where you take the population answer and apply it to an individual. I think probably when you're doing that with the big data and the way we use big data, it probably happens more often. And I think the biggest one we all should know, and this is a skill of an actuary, we know the past is not the future. So we always try and build a model on the past. We use it to predict the future. It ain't. And it's the same for both of them. So what I was really wanting to build up to from a customer viewpoint, they're kind of nervous about the institutions that are the regulators, the politicians. They're very distrusting of the way this machine learning is going to play out. So the best thing for a company's going to have to keep building its trust, keep building its transparency, because that's the way people won't trust in the regulations, because they can't keep up with what we're doing. So actually, you've got to be able to demonstrate and show through your transparency, your claims decisions, all those sort of things, your disclosure on disputes, how you actually put people's data into the models and the outcomes you get. You're going to have to be able to transparently show that, because the rules and regulations just won't be up to date, keep up with them. In insurance, I think we've got a couple of specific issues that are really quite difficult that we're going to have to think through. One of the first ones I think around is a lot of people, well, my view of what insurance delivers, which is volatility reduction as opposed to average claims cost, a lot of society actually thinks it's the average claims cost. So the whole debate around genetic testing, and if we know someone's going to die more often because that's what the stats say, should we charge them a higher price or not? That whole cross-subsidisation on the average claims cost is a real issue for how people are going to believe in your brand and believe in insurance companies going forward, because they believe it's a cross-subsidisation of the average claims cost, not the volatility management where you cross-subsidise or apply the capital for the diversification benefit. I think another feature in insurance we're going to have to think around is the expectation of customers pre and post-claim. It always changes. So how do you manage that so that your reputation is maintained? Because you lose your reputation, I think, going forward. It won't be the price of the product. It won't be the cheapness. It'll be the trust in the brand going forward. It's always been that, but I think it's going to become more and more. And then how you treat the data. So people are very, very cautious at the moment. I don't know if we're going to get less cautious over time with how we treat data, but I'm certain that companies that are seen to be lackadaisical with data will come a cropper. So with that, they're the things I'd like to leave you with, that from a brand point of view, you're going to have to be much more open, much more transparent, and ensure ethical culture in this new world we're going into. Thank you.